You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Listening to a radio station where the mighty horse of heaven sings. Turn your radio on.
Turn your radio.
Turn your radio on.
Turn your radio on.
If you want to feel those good vibrations, come and find the joy that is love can bring. Turn your radio on. Turn your radio on.
And welcome, everybody, with that. Welcome to tonight's live broadcast of TPC. It is Easter weekend, if you didn't pick up on that from the intro music tonight. Saturday evening marks the 30th as we wrap up our annual special series we like to call March Around the World. And already this month we visited with incredible guests from Croatia, Canada, England, Brazil, Australia, Ireland, Germany, and Sweden. Tonight we're going to make stops in Scotland and Puerto Rico. I bet you didn't have that one on your card, Keith Alexander.
Yeah, that's a surprise.
But first, we are going direct to Belgium, where we have a man, really a rising star. I had the chance to meet this man a few months ago at a conference, and he was the star of the show. There's no doubt about it, and his star is rising still. Internationally making headlines all around the world, it's Dries Van Langenhove from Belgium, a former member of the Chamber of Representatives there in the Belgian Parliament, and he's going to join us right now to discuss an outrageous situation that he has been faced with and how we can stand in solidarity with him. Dries, it's great to have you. Let's go straight to you. How are you doing tonight?
Thank you for having me, James. Well, given the circumstances, I'm doing quite okay. I've always been willing to make a few sacrifices, and I've been forced to make a few of those in the past few months. As you mentioned correctly, the Belgian regime is trying to shut me down because I've gained quite a bit of influence over the past few years. My social media accounts, where I'm not censored, are the biggest in the country. My political youth movement influential as well, and the political party to which I am linked, called Vlaams Belang, which translates to Flemish Interest Party, is poised to become the biggest political party in the country and perhaps reshape European politics by lighting the fuse of nationalism all throughout Europe. So interesting times ahead, but the Belgian regime is trying to keep me out of politics. And they have convicted me now for a hate speech and taken away my political rights for 10 years, which means that I will not be able to participate in politics for 10 years. And they are also sending me to jail for 1 year. But I'm still able to talk to you today because I appealed this sentence. So right now I'm on borrowed time.
You know, it was interesting you said that. Keith Alexander, my co-host, is an attorney by trade and a longtime attorney. And we were wondering about that. That was actually one of the questions with everything. And by the way, Dries, I want you to know we have been covering your case for the last couple of weeks on this program. 2 weeks ago, we covered it with Keith Woods out of Ireland, and we revisited it last week. So to have you on as a culmination of this is a great honor for us. But yes, we were wondering, in fact, because of the sentence and, of course, all the headlines we've read, why you weren't already in prison. In fact, when I emailed you earlier this week, I didn't know exactly what the situation was, but I'm glad to have a little more clarity now.
Well, this is Keith, by the way, Dries, and we were thinking about bumper music tonight. We're thinking about, for you, I'm in the jailhouse now. What is happening in Belgium? This sounds like something that happened back in the 40s and behind the Iron Curtain or something. Tell me what have the people in Belgium lost their minds, or has just leadership?
This is supposed to be a free country,
right?
This is what they tell us.
Yeah, liberal democracy is what they call it, but there's nothing liberal or democratic about it, of course. The Belgian regime is spreading their narrative for example, that diversity is our strength. And of course, this whole narrative, this egalitarian, universalist nonsense, it's a narrative that is built completely upon lies. So because it's so weak, this narrative, it cannot withstand even the simplest, even the littlest of political dissidents of opposition. And that's why the regime is trying so hard to shut down every possible opposition figure or political dissident, because they're so scared of anyone objecting to their weak narrative that's built out of lies. So that's why they are trying to shut us down. And they've been searching for some real crimes or some really illegal things that I would have said or done. They've been searching for those for the past 5 years. My house got raided 3 times already by police, 2 times by the anti-terror squad of the Belgian Federal Police. 20 of my friends have had their houses raided as well. 50 of the people closest to me have been interrogated by the police. And over this huge investigation that cost millions of euros in taxpayers' money, they have found nothing at all that was even barely illegal or whatever. They have not found a single thing to put against me. So they have had to resolve to using memes, so politically incorrect jokes that were made by other people in a private group chat of which I allegedly was a part. And they are now saying that these memes are hate speech, which is a punishable offense in Europe. We have no such thing as the First or Second Amendment in Belgium, in Europe. So they have now labeled these memes as hate speech. And they say that I, even though they admit, even the press in Belgium, who is very hostile to me, they admit that I never posted such memes or made such jokes. But they say that I should have done more to prevent others from posting these memes. So not only is humor a crime in Belgium, it's also apparently a crime to not stop other people from posting offensive jokes.
Well, I tell you one thing that's so encouraging just to hear what you're saying right now, in light of all of this heinous injustice, is that you're not backing down. I mean, we have seen so many people at the first hint of trouble, which you are way far beyond that in terms of the persecution and the tactics the regime is using to silence you, but you've not apologized. You have not backed down. You're not stepping down. In fact, you're leading a way forward for our people and setting an example for the rest of us to follow. To give you a little more background information about our guest right now, ladies and gentlemen, Dries Van Langenhoven, as we mentioned, has spent 4 years as a member of the Chamber of Representatives in Belgium. This is part of the federal parliament there, the other half being the Senate. The Chamber of Representatives is considered to be the lower house, I guess you could say, which would be akin to our Congress here, the House of Representatives and the Senate. Now, our friends over at, by the way, just do a Google News search for Dries Van Langenhoven's name, and you'll see how widespread and worldwide this attention he has garnered has been. Our friends over at American Renaissance sum it up as this: Dries Van Langenhoven is one of the most impressive and important activist in our movement. He has guts despite government persecution, financial penalties, threats from Antifa, and furious media hatred, as he was just discussing. He gave a speech at the last American Renaissance conference called "This is the Greatest Time to Be Alive." He said our ancestors are watching us and that he wants to make his ancestors proud, to continue their legacy, and that is what he is doing here. Belgium has not killed him, but they are trying to steal his life. He was just sentenced, as he mentioned, to a year in court. A year in prison, rather, by the courts for so-called spreading hate. He must also pay a fine of more than $17,000. Of course, again, worldwide international media attention to this. Elon Musk has weighed in on this. Were you surprised to find, and I know it's difficult to ever really be able to decipher what Elon Musk is doing, but the fact that he raised awareness of your plight certainly was not an accident on his part. He does these things, I think, very deliberately. What do you think? What message would you assume he was trying to send in that and doing so?
As you correctly stated, it's very difficult to find out the true intentions of Elon Musk. I think he is trying to play both sides, of course, because if he would genuinely support activists like myself, then I think from his position as a businessman, it's always part of the game to play both sides, as he clearly does and has been doing over the past few years. But I'm, of course, very glad with this international attention about the crackdown on political dissidents in Europe and in Belgium in particular. Also, Joe Rogan, Eva Vlaardingerbroek, Steven Crowder, and many other political pundits have spoken on my case, which is good because it puts pressure on the Belgian regime. They are trying to keep this within closed doors. They don't want this to spread because they want to be able to point at, for example, Russia as the big villain who crashes down political dissidents, while at the same time they do exactly the same thing in Belgium, in Holland, in Germany, in France, because my case got quite a bit of attention because I am in certain circles a very well-known activist by now, but in France, people from Génération Identitaire, which is a nationalist activist group, have also been arrested, some of them being put into jail. In Germany, a schoolgirl, a 16-year-old teenager, got police questioning her because she said something about the rise of the AfD party in Germany. So this is happening all throughout Europe, and it's really important that there is more international awareness of all these cases, not only to try to save Europe, but also to save America, because I really think that too many Americans do not realize the uniqueness of the First and Second Amendment and how weak these things are, how quickly they can be taken away. So in that regard, I think it's possible, but also for Americans, that there is more attention on these cases.
Well, Dries, this is Keith. The liberals are no longer liberal anymore, and this is, I can tell you exactly what Elon Musk is doing. He's trying to walk a tightrope. He doesn't approve of what has happened to you, but on the other hand, what he really wants is to make sure that you don't, that he doesn't get shut out, that X or the former Twitter doesn't get deplatformed in Western Europe. So he is walking a tightrope, but this is, like you said, this is totally unprecedented. This is not what Europe is supposed to be, Western Europe in particular. Western Europe may not have a First Amendment or a Second Amendment, but it was supposed to be a place where people could speak their minds, and it's no longer that, apparently, in your Exhibit 1.
Yeah, well, one of the things they're trying to do by doing this is they want to... So I'm quite well known throughout... and Holland, of course. I used to be one of the most popular, and I've gotten quite a bit of attention. My social media is quite big. Out of me, they show all young people in Western Europe that are thinking about nationalist activism, about doing activism for people. They show all these young people that if you partake in peaceful activism for our people, you will be shut down. You will be put into prison, thrown out of the banks, you will miss out on opportunities and all these kinds of things. They want to show an example, and they are using me as this example. And their true intention is to eradicate peaceful activism, to really make it impossible for people to peacefully resist these great replacement people. And then eventually, it's all time before one. In Western Europe becomes so irritated, frustrated, desperate that they will resolve to violent means. And once that happens, the regime will have the perfect excuse to shut us down completely, to really prison, because then they will say we have to protect the people from extremists.
Well, that's certainly what they'll say. You mentioned some of the feedback that was coming in on social media, some of the huge accounts on social media. This was another one, and I think this sums it up all quite nicely. Belgian politician Dries Van Langenhove has been sentenced to 1 year in prison because he belonged to a group chat where someone else posted so-called offensive memes. He did not post the memes himself, and even if he did, that would not justify an arrest, much less a prison sentence. This is a politically motivated effort to clamp down on Belgian nationalists, especially because they can't get him for speaking out against mass migration. Now, the judge says you should have done more to stop others from sending memes. Now, this is, I have to say, Dries, this is the most egregious case I've ever heard of, and believe me, that's saying something. It really defies parody. It goes well beyond parody, I guess I should say. And then, of course, you are the center of the story. This is your story. It is not Elon Musk, although Elon Musk chiming in on this is noteworthy. But you've mentioned the backlash from people all around the world to this. You have appealed, so there is hope that this decision could be reversed, and that you, in fact, will not have to actually go to prison for a year. But I think of equal importance is the fact that to ban you from running, a rising star as you are in politics in that part of Europe, from running for 10 years is to deprive our people of a great champion, which is, of course, I'm sure, what they intend to do.
Yes, and they know that it's working. I mean, even though I am optimistic about the future of our people, I think we will overcome all these great challenges. And I mean, said in a speech at the MRAN conference this summer, I am in a way been born in this a huge difference for our people. But these wicked punishments by the Belgian regime are making it very difficult for me to continue my activism, and the regime knows this by shutting me out of the banks, by shutting me out of all these payment providers. It's been very hard for me to generate some income by punishing me with all these huge fines, by having me pay for all these lawyers, all these court fees. They're taking away the few funds that I have. So in that regard, it's been very challenging over the past 2 years. But now I face truly losing my freedom, being taken away from my family, away from my businesses, which will make it even harder for me to make ends meet. So in that way, they are in the short run to be able to shut me down, I feel. Even if in the Court of Appeals, which should be slightly more neutral than the first, where I was sentenced to a year in prison, which is just to give you a bit of a context, as I know in Belgium, you almost never get a jail sentence. So me being given 1 year of effective jail punishment is a huge thing in itself. Even pedophiles, rapists, people who beat others up, robberies, do not get jail sentences in Belgium. It almost never happens. Only 3 weeks ago, a famous Belgian actor who admitted to the rape of three different children got zero jail time. He did not get a prison sentence.
I'm surprised you didn't get a medal.
All the time. Yeah, indeed. But these things happen all the time. They never get a prison sentence, but I did. Now, even though I'm quite confident that for the Court of Appeals, I will probably get a suspended jail sentence instead of an effective jail sentence, in the long run, that doesn't really make that much of a difference, because I have three other cases coming up as well, two of those also for so-called hate speech. And the problem is, if I get convicted for one of these other cases, then all my suspended sentences will immediately become effective sentences. So I think there is almost no getting out of jail for me. I mean, I'm quite sure that eventually, if I continue my activism, I will have to go to jail.
They want to shut you up. They want to stick a sock in your mouth, Dries. That's the whole thing.
Well, and it's because of his effectiveness, obviously. And I think, interestingly, Dries, is the fact that this is happening to you in Belgium, which has one of the greatest nationalist movements in the world. I mean, you're there with Vlaams Belang, our friends Philip de Winter and Anke Vandermeersch and others who have come down to Memphis to see us and have been regular guests on this program. There is a wonderful, professional, polished, and effective nationalist movement in Belgium. And it was interesting to me that it is in Belgium where we see the most egregious court case.
Well, it's where The Hague is, too.
That has happened to any dissident. How do you reconcile that? That on one hand, there are great things happening in Belgium for our people, but on the other hand, this case, which is the most outlandish, ridiculous, bizarre thing I've ever seen come out of a court anywhere, it also is taking place.
Well, the thing is, Brussels is in the middle of Flanders, and Flanders is in the middle of the European Union. So this is a very symbolic place, a very influential place, of course. And I know that it's a bit cliche to say, but the coming elections in Belgium might be the most important elections in the history of our country and our people, because in a few months, the Flemish people will have the choice to make our country independent. So we do not want to stay in this Belgian artificial state that is oppressing the Flemish people. We want an independent Flanders, a nationalistic right-wing Flanders, and that could light the fuse of nationalism all throughout Europe. That would place Brussels in possibly the most right-wing nationalistic part of Europe all of a sudden. And of course, the Belgian regime and the European Union Eurocrats are so afraid of this happening. And Vlaams Belang is now poised to become the biggest political party in the country and possibly make Flanders an anti-migration nationalist stronghold. And trying to ban Vlaams Belang, but banning a political party is quite difficult. So they are now drafting new legislation to stop the funding of Vlaams Belang, and then they want to ban the party completely. The same is, by the way, happening with AfD in Germany. The same is happening with FVD in the Netherlands. So this playbook is being used by these globalist elites all throughout Europe. But in Brussels, in Belgium in particular, they are trying to ban Vlaams Belang. But the first step would be banning me, because I'm a very important figure in the Vlaams Belang movement. And I, as an independent activist, I can be shut down. It's easier to put me in jail than it is to ban Vlaams Belang. So they're going for me first. But once I'm put into jail, they will go for Vlaams Belang next. And luckily, the people at Vlaams Belang know this, and they are preparing accordingly.
Which, as you mentioned, is the most popular political party in the country. So this is we will keep a fixed eye on this, I guess I should say. And there's one more thing I want to ask you, Dries. And again, in the midst of all of this, joining us from past midnight on Easter Sunday in Belgium to be with our audience tonight, we really appreciate it. A lot of stuff going on in your life, but we want to be able to support you. And as a matter of fact, I just did. And as I always do on the rare occasion when I ask our audience to support something, I like to do it first and lead by example in that way. So while Dries was making his comment just a moment ago, I went to a GiveSendGo account that we're going to give you the information for, and I made a donation. Now, when you go here, and we're going to put a post up at our website on Monday that will give you the information on how you can go there. We're going to tell you right now. But I made a small contribution, and I hope that everyone will do their best to match that. Tell us how we can do that, how we can stand in solidarity with you, how we can support you, and give us all that information. We have about 2 minutes to go, Dries.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, first of all, for the support. However big or small, it's always heartwarming to see international support. So thank you very much for that. People can, of course, go to givesendgo.com/steundries. Now, it's a Dutch term, so it's quite difficult for Americans, probably. But if you go to my profile on X, you will also find a link to the GiveSendGo, or also on my Telegram profile. Now, these funds are being used to pay for the fines, first of all, and then pay for lawyers. So I've got a lot of worries on my head. Of course, I've got my freedom, my family, and my activism, my businesses to worry about. It's very heartwarming and calming for the nerves that I, at least by doing crowdfundings, I at least don't have to worry about the financial cost of the activism. So it's very important to do so. And I would also like to suggest, and I've done so on many international podcasts over the past few weeks, support your local activists. So of course, thank you for the international support for me, but support your local activists, because the playbook that's being used to shut me down is also being used, or will be used, to shut down your local activists. So get in touch with them, help them any way you can, be it physically, mentally, or financially. Please help and support your local activists. These people are making sacrifices, so they need your help as well.
We got to support everybody, our local activists, our champions around the world. That's what this series is about. March around the world every year here on this program. We like to touch base with leading elected officials and activists and thought leaders around the world. And Dries Van Langenhoven is second to none. We have a wonderful collection of people who come on this program every year, including those from Belgium, as we just mentioned. Great people in Vlaams Belang. But, folks, let me just tell you, I'll spell it out for you. GiveSendGo.com/STEUN and then Dries, D-R-I-E-S. GiveSendGo.com/STEUN. D-R-I-E-S. We'll send that out to our email list. We'll put it on our website. I just donated. It says you're going to donate in euros. I did it with an American credit card. No problem at all. Gifts and Go is a fantastic website, and they really hold the line. Go donate now. Donate tomorrow whenever you listen to this. Dries, God bless you. Happy Easter. Thanks for joining us from Belgium.
Exposing corruption. Informing citizens. Pursuing liberty. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
USA News, I'm Laura Winters. President Biden telling reporters he plans on visiting the port of Baltimore where the Francis Scott Key Bridge collapsed next week. Large cranes on barges being brought in by the U.S. Navy. The goal is to remove all of the heavy metal from the collapsed bridge and get the area open as soon as possible. Here is Maryland Governor Democrat Wes Moore.
With a salvage operation this complex, and frankly with a salvage operation this unprecedented, you need to plan for every single moment, and every time you take action to move a piece of wreckage, you understand that that requires you to reassess the situation.
Former President Trump is hoping to raise more money than President Biden did in New York at a huge upcoming fundraiser in Palm Beach on April 6th. The Biden campaign raising a record $25 million at the event at Radio City Music Hall. Former Presidents Obama and Clinton attending, along with Lizzo and Queen Latifah. Trump says he hopes to raise more than $30 million at the party at Mar-a-Lago. Now, the fundraiser will be hosted by New York hedge fund billionaire John Paulson, who has been mentioned by Trump as a possible Treasury Secretary if he is elected in November. In other news, the Biden administration on Friday authorizing billions of dollars in aid to Israel, including bombs and fighter jets. This is an employee at the State Department stepping down because she doesn't like the Biden administration's support of Israel. Here's USA's Ryan Daniels.
A State Department official stepping down to protest U.S. support of Israel. This week, Anel Shaleen announced her resignation from her position with the Bureau of Democracy, Human Rights, and Labor. She said she could no longer work for the administration as, she says, it has enabled Israeli atrocities in Gaza. I'm Ryan Daniels.
And I'm Laura Winters, USA News.
Omaha Steaks is rewriting the book on burgers with an all-new handmade texture for the juiciest home-style burgers you've ever tasted. Their pure ground burgers are made from single cuts of real aged Omaha steaks. These are truly steaks on a bun. Filet mignon, ribeye, New York strip, sirloin, and even brisket burgers. Now is the time to experience the exclusive Burger Perfection Flight for just $79.99. Go to omahasteaks.com and use promo code TREAT at checkout to get an extra $20 off your order plus free shipping. You'll get four of each pure ground burger so you can sample all the steak on a bun greatness. These burgers are crafted for a juicier, more tender experience, making your mouth water with every single bite. Don't wait. Go to omahasteaks.com. Use promo code TREAT at checkout and get $20 off the Burger Perfection Flight and discover your new burger obsession. Minimum order may be required.
Find your inner rebel at Dixie Republic, the world's largest Confederate store, located in Travelers Rest, South Carolina. The anti-white, anti-Christ, anti-Southern world ends at the asphalt. Welcome to God's country. Log on to DixieRepublic.com to view our Southern merchandise, from flags to t-shirts to artwork. At the store, browse through our extensive collection of belt buckles and have a custom-made leather belt handcrafted in our Johnny Reb's Gun and Leather Shop. That's DixieRepublic.com, where you can meet all of your Southern needs. While you're waiting, drop by our Confederate Corner for a free cup of coffee and good conversation. Remember, there are no strangers here, just friends who haven't met yet. Dixie Republic, we're not just a roadside attraction, we're a destination for our people. For more information, visit DixieRepublic.com.
The Honorable Cause of Free South is a collection of 12 essays written by Southern nationalist authors. The book explores topics such as what is the Southern nation, what is Southern nationalism, and how can we achieve a free and independent Dixie. The Honorable Cause answers questions on our own terms. The book invites readers to understand for themselves why a free and independent Dixie is both preferable and possible. The book pulls in some of the biggest producers of pro-South content, including James Edwards, the host and creator of The Political Cesspool, and Wilson Smith, author of Charlottesville Untold, Arkansas congressional candidate and activist Neil Kumar, host and creator of the Dissident Mama podcast, Rebecca Dillingham, author of A Walk in the Park, My Charlottesville Story, Identity Dixie's Patrick Martin, and yours truly, Michael Hill, founder and president of the League of the South, as well as several other authors. The Honorable Cause is available now at Amazon.com.
Exactly the way we used to sing it on Sunday morning, not just at Easter, but year-round in my small congregation growing up as a boy. It was a wonderful way to grow up, and I'm still thankful for the parents who gave me that childhood, that boyhood. And now here we are, Easter Sunday weekend, just a few hours from Easter Sunday for us, but a lot closer for our next guest. Jim Dowson is an ordained minister and the father of 9 children. He's been active in numerous patriotic organizations and movements throughout Europe. He is known as the invisible man of the British right, and he's a political strategist who is an Ulster Scot, Keith Alexander.
And he's not afraid to call a spade a dirty shovel, as we say over here.
And he's joining us live right now from Northern Ireland, where it's just minutes away from Easter Sunday. Happy Easter, happy Resurrection Day, Brother Jim. He is risen.
Amen, brother. He is risen indeed. Happy Resurrection Day. You know, when I was a boy, I grew up congregational, Calvinist. So we never even spoke about Easter. But as I'm getting old, I'm getting a bit liberal, you know. So,
you know, in America, congregationalism is a New England phenomenon, basically. So that's kind of interesting. I'm a Reformed Anglican. I had to get out of the Episcopal Church, which was most like the Anglican Church when they started having gay bishops and things like that.
Amen.
A lot of people have done that. You know, you just can't mock God's word like that and call yourself a Christian.
No. Well, the Congregationalists were original Puritans. Puritans belonged to the Congregational denomination. But mainstream Congregationalism now is full of gays and weirdos. And the usual stuff, you know. So I'm my own church that I go to tomorrow is Reformed Congregational, of course. No gays, no weirdos, no lesbians, nothing like that.
All right, let me ask you this, Jim, and I'm looking now and I'm marveling at what a wonderful month it's been on this program, if not in all ports of call that we've stopped in. We're checking the pulse of our people at all of the different locations, the different nations we've been visiting: Croatia, Canada, England, Brazil, Australia, Ireland, Germany, Sweden. We were just in Belgium with the former member of the Chamber of Representatives, Dries Van Langenhove, very famous case that he is faced with the so-called hate crimes charges. And there's a lot going on in the British Isles as well. But Jim, your activism is not, I don't want to say confined to just your native homeland. You have left an imprint throughout all of Europe, from the Balkans and back. You survey the European landscape right now, and you put your finger to the pulse.
What's going on?
Yeah, what's going on? How are we doing? And are we doing better in some places than others? I think you're a good one to give a sort of a pan-European assessment of this question that we've asked so many this month.
Well, it's pretty grim. Ireland, for example, down south, Southern Ireland, which is historically my bitter and sworn enemies, the Catholics in Ireland, are very communist. However, the EU has flooded Ireland like they have never flooded any country in the history of the world. Even if you travel off-road on the dirt roads for 2 hours and you get down to a little shack in a little tiny village, there's 50 Africans planted there. They just put these shacks up. The government put these little pods there and stick 50 African single young men there. However, the Irish, unlike all the rest of the Europeans, and good on them, the Irish are rising and they're fighting on the streets. They're out on horseback, riding up and down the streets, fighting with the immigrants, fighting with the police. And, you know, it's causing a lot of trouble. And people are saying, this is outrageous behaviour. But look, when somebody's taking your ancient homeland that you fought 800 years to get the British out and to give it up to Africans, for a man not to stand up and fight, I would say would be a disgrace. Not the fact that men are now standing up and fight. So I say, God bless the Irish. And we need to see it in Germany and France. And the worst place of all for people not fighting back is England. The English are finished. Gone. Done. No way back.
I mean, can you imagine that? I mean, we have our friend Nick Griffin there who was on earlier this month, as he always is during this series. And what a guy. I love him to death. And but you know, he, an Englishman, the sun never set on the empire, and now it doesn't even rise in London. The capital city is foreign occupied territory. Yeah, it is just a damn thing, and that all happened in 100 years.
Well,
100 years.
Less than that. I mean, you know, we had Ramadan lights all over Oxford Street, central London, this week. No Easter lights, all Ramadan lights for the Muslim population, and there's only 30% of London that's now even white, and that white includes all European different races, not necessarily Englishmen. But the problem is, the English, they're a Germanic people, so they're very private, they're very individualistic. An Englishman's home's his castle, there's no sense of tribe, and this is much to their detriment, because, you know, 1 million young white English girls have been raped in England. 1 million. Amnesty International say 1 million. So if they say 1 million, it's probably 3 million. And not one single Englishman has lifted a gun, a stone, a stick to retaliate. Not one. So when a people can sit back and watch 1 million of the young girls being gang raped by Muslim rape gangs and do nothing about it, that people are in trouble. And I'll tell you why they're in trouble. They've lost the faith in Jesus Christ.
They've lost the faith of
their fathers.
Let me give you a thought, too, on that, if I could. I was thinking about this, too. It's a technique called gaslighting, okay? What is gaslighting? It's like that movie from 1944. It's making you feel guilt about something you should not feel guilty about. And they have succeeded. All the left has succeeded. That's what's happened to the British people. That's what's happened to the American people. That's what's happened to a lot of Europe, and other groups don't seem to be susceptible to this particular malady.
But I want to go back, and that's a good observation, Keith. I want to go back to you, Brother Jim, with your background as an ordained minister, but also as an advocate for our people, and we'll touch on that a little bit more before this abbreviated interview. I told you earlier on the phone today, an hour with you is never enough. I said 30 minutes is only going to whet the appetite, but I'm glad to have you back for any reason. And folks, go and search our broadcast archives for Jim Dowson. Fantastic appearances every time, but to have you on Easter is something I really wanted to do this week, and I'm glad that you were able to make the time. But the correlating the demise of our nations and of our civilization with the moving away from the faith of our fathers, what exactly about that is causal?
Well, when you move away from the faith, you move away from everything that sets us up as men. When you're a Christian, your main duty, you understand your main duty as a Christian, is a son of God, and your duty is to protect your womenfolk and your children. First of all, have children, and then rear them up in the fear and admonition of the Lord. When you don't have any rule book like that, when you don't have any moral compass like that, well, what is a man? What does it mean? You know, this is why we've got 72 genders and the rest. What does it mean? Unless you have the foundations and the faith of our fathers, we're like a ship on the ocean without a rudder. We're lost. And I see this today now. People are saying, Christian, I see all these Christians, especially in America, big, big hitter Christians, saying that Christian nationalism is a bad thing. Well, let me tell you this. If you're a Christian, you are a nationalist. And you cannot be a nationalist unless you're a Christian. So I don't believe any of this stuff. We are Christians, we are nationalists, and that is part of God's divine plan.
And you should want your government to be populated by other Christians.
Absolutely. Christians should prefer Christians as their leaders. There's no doubt about that. And, Jim, that's an incredible answer you gave, because you're reading my mind. I was going to ask you if you had observed all of the hubbub and all of the news and all of the attacks on Christian nationalism by the press here in the United States, by the controlled media here in the United States. And obviously you have noticed that is something that more and more you are seeing stories about, the dangers, the racism, the anti-Semitism, the bigotry, the xenophobia of Christian nationalism. I mean, the media is using all the buzzwords to define true, heartfelt, and Bible-believing Christians.
And see, what we're trying to do is fight back against the gaslighting. We're saying, no, I don't feel guilty about the plight of the colored races or sexual perverts. They are responsible for their own plight. And don't put it on me. And when you say that, then you've become their mortal enemy.
Well, somebody's got to say, as Jim said, somebody's got to... I mean, you got to say enough's enough, because, Jim, as you mentioned earlier today, the capitals of Europe, so many capitals of Western Europe especially, are going to be 75% Muslim in short order.
75% in 100 years, and I think it'll be a lot sooner. But I also see in America there, Joe Biden signed the document that tomorrow,
Resurrection Day,
will be Trans Visibility Day or something, and he's supposed to be a Catholic. That man, obviously he's deranged. He doesn't know what he's doing. Obama's working his strings.
He doesn't know what he had for breakfast.
He doesn't know what type of day it is. But look, this shouting and bawling about Christian nationalism, that means we're getting to them. And my old grandmother, old Irish woman, used to say, when you throw a stone into a pack of dogs, you know you've hit one when you hear a yelp. And that's what's going on. They don't like this.
Hey,
so don't
I
be
like
afraid
that.
Of being a Christian nationalist. I am a nationalist Christian or a Christian nationalist, whatever you want to say. That's what I am. And that's how I was born, on my mother's knee. I was whispered the songs of my tribe, my people, and that's how I'll die. So we don't care about what they say. Don't worry. People worry too much about what the enemy says and what the enemy thinks. We shouldn't give a damn about what the enemy thinks, what the enemy says. Stick close to God.
In fact, what we ought to do, Jim, is what we need to do is, when the enemy gets on you, that's validation that you're on the right track.
I've got to tell you something, Jim. Keith Alexander is my witness. When you were speaking just a moment ago, I pounded the desk.
He was in the amen corner.
As a point of emphasis, absolutely. Our people should not care what the hounds of hell, what these demonic people.
Well, the thing is, we care about it. We say, thank you very much. You now have validated that my position is correct.
That's fine. That's not what, unfortunately, that's not what so many of our people are doing. They are they place their lot in life on whether or not they are. The old A.W. Tozer quote, as they descend and society is smilingly accepting our surrender, we consider that to be a point of merit something.
But the church isn't changing the culture. The culture is changing the church.
But I want to talk about this, Jim, once again, as if you're reading from our notes here in the United States, in Dixieland, the South, all the way to Northern Ireland. One of the things I was going to ask you about was whether or not you had heard about this proclamation from Joe Biden. Let's read it here. This is big news here in America. President Biden today, Saturday, proclaimed March 31st, that's Easter Sunday, as the Transgender Day of Visibility. And this is what the statement reads. I, Joseph R. Biden, Jr., President of the United States of America, by virtue of the authority vested in me by the Constitution and the laws of the United States, to hereby proclaim March 31st, that's tomorrow, that's Easter, as Resurrection Day, as we call it, as Transgender Day of Visibility. I call on Americans to join us in lifting up the lives and voices of transgender people throughout our nation, and to work towards eliminating violence and discrimination against all transgender, gender nonconforming, and non-binary people, whatever that is. And it is nothing. It's a sexual perversity. It's mental illness. But it's a mental illness. But Jim, not a word in this proclamation about Christians, about Christ, about resurrection, about Easter. What do you make of this, just as an observer?
It's fantastic, because I'll give you five words here. God will not be mocked, period.
Yeah.
And he is mocking the Lord Jesus Christ, whose day is tomorrow, when we celebrate, whether it's the right day or not, it doesn't matter. We celebrate as a people the resurrection of our living Lord and Savior. The Muslims have a dead prophet. We have a living Lord. And Joe Biden has mocked God, and the Bible tells us the penalties for mocking God. So Joe Biden's done a great thing, in my opinion. The American people are going to be freed of this wretched man very soon, because God will
not be mocked. The thing about it.
God reigns on the throne.
The thing about Joe Biden is he is a known sexual pervert. He's known, you know, he gives the term laying on of hands a new meaning, okay? He's, and he's
known for sniffing
little girls' hairs and you know, and putting his hands on them and whatnot. What a dude!
Yeah, well, I mean, but this is it.
A creature.
Yeah, but I agree. Well, I was going to say I agree with you on this. I really, Jim, as long as I've known you years now, I've agreed with everything I've ever heard you say. But the church has to regain its backbone, because it's got to start, in my opinion, it's got to start in the church. You have to have that faith that leads to strong families, which lead to strong civilizations. And if the church does not re-embrace, and I think some are, the so-called Christian nationalists are beginning more and more to become a little bit more muscular, but you are going to have a masculine and a muscular Christianity, and not this apologetic, weakling Christianity that is.
No, we need to stop turning over our government to non-Christians. That's where we started to go wrong. That was the beginning.
Well, Christianity itself, there's a lot of professing Christians that are weak, though, and that's a problem. Jim?
There is, and I think demographically we're up against it, because America, just like Europe, is going to be overrun by leftists. You know, and if Trump doesn't get into this election, you probably will never, ever, ever have another conservative president ever. But it's not the end of the world. Christians thrive. Christians thrive in the blood of the martyrs. And, yes, you know, I can't go with more than 5 miles anywhere in the UK without hitting a village with a post or a marker or a cenotaph that it was the spot of where Christians were martyred for the faith. Think about that. I can't drive 5 miles without hitting a martyr's memorial. We thrive in that environment. That's what gave us our strength. So we've had the easy street for far too long. The church thrives when the blood of the martyrs is shed. So that's where we're going. We need to just accept that, lap it up. The opposition will destroy themselves. So it doesn't matter. What we need to concentrate on is the rebuilding.
Yes.
When all this happens, we need to rebuild.
You are right, Jim. I mean, yes, I talk about this all the time, that they are making, a friend of ours in Atlanta says they are making every mistake that we would have them make. They will collapse under the weight of their own weight.
Well, they've tried to make sexual perversion a civil right, and I think that's a bridge too far for many people, and it's bringing more people to our side every day.
Their agenda is not going to stand the test of time. I am sure of that, but I am also sure, and as a husband and a father, Jim, you have 9 children. I have 3 still in the nest. Keith has 3 out of the nest. But nevertheless, we're all fathers here. And so, of course, we don't want to wish a world of violence and uncertainty on our children. But it is true that a nation, a people who suffer together are bound together, and suffering can turn into a great strength. And as you said, we've been on the easy street far too long. Let's take a quick, I want to play this very quickly. It's about a minute clip, just to give you a little more information, folks, about our guest right now. Dowson has been called the invisible man of the British right. Also, according to his detractors, the evil genius of British fascism. This is their words.
Scottish Mussolini.
that's right. This is from an appearance that he made on a BBC program. Let's listen to what they have to say here, if I can get it all queued up very quickly.
An investigation for this programme and BBC Radio Current Affairs has found that a British far-right activist is behind a militant Christian organisation which is stirring tensions in Eastern Europe. Jim Dowson is a social media expert who founded the far-right Britain First group and gained it a huge following on Facebook. Working with the Balkan Investigative Reporting Network, we found Mr. Dowson is now at the centre of an organisation called Knights Templar International, which also has a popular Facebook page, a website, and a TV channel based in Serbia. Simon Cox reports.
He He's been singled out as Britain's most influential far-right activist by anti-racism campaigners.
That's who we have on the line with us right now. Now,
what,
I think
what a commendation that was.
I can tell you, yes, who wouldn't pay money for such a glowing introduction? But our audience is well aware and very capable of sifting through these terms and deciphering them and translating them. So what you've got here, ladies and gentlemen, is a champion for our people, of our faith, of our historic
nations. Well, you know, the next day, the British Prime Minister stood up in the Houses of Parliament and mentioned me by name and said, "This man must be taken off social media." And within 24 hours,
you have something in common with our friend James. He did the same. Congress did the same thing.
Well, Congress did, but Nick Griffin, I can't even pronounce his name. I forget it. The Prime Minister of the UK now,
Ravi Shankar.
I think
he's a guru for the Beatles.
Well, but yeah. So anyway,
we call him Sabu, the Elephant Boy.
Gunga Din.
Anyway, folks, what we've got here is a real mover and shaker, Jim Dowson, and you enjoy hearing him. But as I said, Jim, and we're running out of time here, but your fingerprints are not just on the British Isles, although that is your birthplace. That is where you were born. That is where you will be laid to rest when God calls you home. But you have worked throughout Europe and into the Balkans as well. You look at Europe. Where is the faith surging? Where does our hope lie right now, to the extent that our hope lies anywhere outside of Christ and this side of heaven? But what nations are getting it right now, or at least moving in the right direction? We know that the British Isles...
Hungary's doing well, and Serbia, and we must pray for Serbia and Kosovo, because, you know, there was a few Serbs killed the other day there. And they weren't killed by the Kosovan troops. They were killed by U.S. Special Forces, who are put there by the NATO. So we need to pray for these people. But our faith is getting stronger as the Muslim threat gets more and more. But it's getting complicated because the British right wing now is a godless Zionist organization, the whole right wing. And we fight against it. And I would say, and I know it's controversial in America, but I would say this Easter, I've done a visual all Easter, for the innocent people of Gaza being massacred by this war machine
of
Israel,
sure,
supplied by British and American bombs. Look, God will not honor us if we have no compassion. I despise Muslims, you know that. But what is happening in Gaza is a live, blow-by-blow, televised genocide, and Christians must speak out against it. God will not deal with us if we are unjust people. Now, I hate Muslims, but this is wrong.
I mean, the official American government stand, you know what that is. And I hope that our people across Europe and in Russia will understand that there's a difference between certain Americans and the occupied government that rules over us.
We know that, brother. We know.
But no,
we
I know you know that. But I know you know that. But I,
well,
I
look, it's everywhere in Europe. That same group of people, which are not the founding stock of all these nations, is in charge. I want to wish you a happy Easter, and I want to give you an Easter present, okay? That Easter present is get on YouTube and watch Disney's Kidnap movie from the mid-1950s. That will bring you close to your nation.
Though. All right. I didn't
Have you ever seen that?
I haven't Kidnap, I remember it well, yes.
Jim knows it.
Yeah, I know it. Kidnap is a fantastic film. But we must keep our brothers and sisters all over the world, whether you be in Kosovo or whether you be anywhere in the world where Christians are under oppression. And I pray for America, because I watch every night those people pouring across your borders. This is a full-blown assault on America. Hitler couldn't do it. The Kaiser couldn't do it. Tojo and the Japanese Empire couldn't do it. But Joe Biden has flooded your country with people with ill intent. And may God bless America. May God protect America. And this is the rod that will chasten the Christians in America to wake up, to stand up, to be fine Christian men and Christian women and resist. Because at this stage in the game, we're not talking about winning anymore. We're talking about resisting. And there's nothing nobler and finer to unite a people than resistance.
Well, we'll just do like former President Eisenhower did with Operation Wetback in the 1950s.
Well, that's the dream scenario. But I'll tell you what, Jim, in all reality, I mean, as the descendants of Confederate veterans here, you know, those Scotch-Irish that came down here to the United States and the American South, you are right. Resistance. And our people need to be tempered again. They need to be hardened. And the only way, unfortunately, for that to occur, and it will be for our betterment, is to go through some tough times, and I mean real tough times, not just your favorite
candidate
losing.
We're going to go through tough times. And never forget, brother, never forget. I'm out on Monday. We have a 100,000 strong militant militia patriotic parade on Monday, Easter Monday. And many, many of the flags flying that day will be the old Confederate flag. It'll be flying all over Northern Ireland on Monday.
A flag of
ours and bars.
Resistance around the world. Resistance to tyranny around the world. Jim, we're out of time. Happy Easter. I can tell you happy Easter now because it is midnight in the UK now.
Amen.
Happy Easter, brother. Let's do this again very soon. You're the best.
Happy Easter.